What you're about to experience is one man's quest to see beyond the tumultuous period we're in and to envision what lies just beyond our grasp, yet well within our reach. Welcome to Larry Rifkin's America Trends, where the future has arrived, and it's just in time.
Welcome back to another episode as we publish more on America Trends podcast. Larry Rifkin and my friend John Krofcik. And today, you and I studying once again in our studio, getting an advanced degree in podcastology from the University of Lessons Hard Learned. Right, John?
Or School of Hard Knocks.
In our little laboratory, experimenting with all form of podcast. And the reason we're talking about schooling and education today is that we focused on elementary and secondary education.
Right, with John Costa, right?
Right. We've done some things also about higher education. Yep. Now we're going even higher. Our love is lifting us higher, John, and higher.
All right. We're going to get a higher degree?
We are going past the bachelor's degree, and we're going fast forward into the master's degree, John.
The master's degree.
Now, I know everybody is smitten with the bachelor.
Yes.
You know, well, the series.
Right,
not the degree.
Right. Well, I think the bachelor is okay degree.
The bachelor degree is a good degree, of course, to some extent and to some degree. But what am I, Professor Irwin Corey here? Now, that's going to be a reference that's going to go right over the heads. But by the way, folks, if you have never seen Professor Irwin Corey, now, if you're 20-some-odd or 30 and you say, who is that? You got to go back on YouTube and look at Professor Irwin Corey. One of the funniest bits. How would you describe him?
Can I introduce you?
What was the question?
The world's foremost authority, Professor Irwin Corey.
Right.
Welcome.
Well, I feel not only honored, but I feel the confrontation upon which we have set our sights can no longer endure at the propensity of a developing prognosis. Now you say, what? It doesn't matter that we... What was the question?
What's your name, sir?
Oh, Professor Irwin Corey, the world's foremost authority. Not only has my information deterred those who have contributed financially to this menace establishment, realize that we can have another diphthong or a telethon in order to raise money for some needy dictators that are outside, and we have to have the phone calls, otherwise we cannot cooperate with those who intended to sublimate their curiosity, bringing about, as he once said, the various presidents, what's his name, Mayor, George Bush. Remember, he said, read my lips and kiss my... But he didn't know the result that could proclamate a source from that innuendo.
Hey, funny. He's funny.
Gosh, he was great. I loved him.
You think he was a master?
Well, he was a master of obfuscation. You got to hear him. I mean, we can't do justice. But John, really, the bachelor's degree often is thought about as the kind of last hurdle for a lot of people. Then they go out into the job world. But there's been a phenomenon taking place, a trend, and that's why we're dealing with it, where a lot of people are going back for a master's degree.
Yes.
Now, the question about a master's degree is, well, what does that guarantee you?
Right. And how much does it cost?
And is there any financial aid?
We both have daughters who are paying mucho dinero for their master's.
But I'm not one who's going to talk down the master's degree, and I'll tell you why. And I'm going to tell you why for a very personal reason. I thought I was going to go to law school, John.
Wow.
And I then realized that I don't know if I want to argue in the court of law.
You'd make a great Perry Mason, though.
Defending the dregs of society. You know, what's interesting in our society is how much that has turned and what that tells us, because we used to love the defense attorney.
Right.
Somebody who would right the injustices of the system.
And now they're the bad guy.
Right. And now the good guys are the prosecutors. How did that turn? Think about that, friends. Really. It tells you a lot. We'd rather enforce these laws rather than right so many of the wrongs that are still hanging over us. But with that said, I went on for a master's degree instead, because I wanted to argue more in the court of public opinion. And so my whole life has been spent in media, and I guess you could say arguing in the court of public opinion. And so I went and got a master's degree in a thing called corporate and political communication.
Okay.
At a university in Fairfield County, Fairfield University. And it was great, John, because they had so many practitioners down there. I'll never forget Joe Cahalan, who was the head of public relations for Xerox.
They got a very beautiful campus down there, too.
Where, Fairfield?
Yeah.
Oh, it's still, still is, John. It's still there. Believe it or not, I left, but it's still there. But my program died about 10 years later, and I never understood that, because we had these wonderful Jesuit professors on rhetoric and some of the old Greek and Roman approaches to things. And then, of course, we had the practitioners and the real community, like this man from Xerox.
Right.
And that was really helpful to me. Now, I couldn't at the time tell you why I needed that degree. But ultimately, I got a job with the State Department of Education as a speechwriter for the Commissioner of Education, a really smart guy, a Harvard-trained educator. And I can tell you with certainty that I never would have gotten that job. He would never have said, well, this kid who came out of Easter Seal Rehabilitation Center, because that was my job before, without that degree.
Right. But in education, I can see that, because there seems to be... They've designed education that way, so they want their people to be that way.
Right, and right. They like added pedigree.
But in a corporate world, or even in a nonprofit world, do you think it still makes the same difference?
I think the question is, when you're looking for a leg up, and I would argue that this vast increase in the number of people going for master's degrees speaks in part to the fact that after 2008 and 2009, a lot of people were shunted aside, and they didn't have anywhere to go. And they said, well, I might as well go back and get another degree, because that will give me a leg up on the ladder,
right.
Not knowing exactly what it leads to.
Right.
And certainly it depends on what kind of degree and what the area, if it's computer science versus humanities or whatever. But I found that happened to be very fortuitous, because I got into the State Department of Education,
right.
Worked for the commissioner for a couple of years, and then because of the relationship between that department and Connecticut Public Television, I was easily moved over there when I made that effort. And so that's where I spent the next quarter of a century.
So it did help you.
It did.
Yeah.
Now, was it intentional? Not really. But it was really purposeful in the end.
Yeah.
So I don't know that any added education is ever bad.
No, education is good. It's how the colleges are doing it that's bad.
Well, there's this issue now with the master's degree. Is it a profit center? Is it just something they recognize, and so they're putting together programs that may not have the right heft and substance and may be just a little fanciful, and they figure, well, there's a market for this. And this is the fastest growing degree in higher education.
You gotta ask yourself why that is.
Well, we're going to ask Mark Schneider that. He's got lots of experience in higher education. Right now, he's with the American Enterprise Institute, and he and others there have really studied this issue of the master's degree. And is it becoming the new bachelor's? That's what we'll describe today on this episode of America Trends. On the line with us is Mark Schneider from the American Enterprise Institute. And the question at hand today is the master's. Is it really the new bachelor's degree? And Mark, there hasn't been that much study of the impact of the master's, and you've tried to glean what is out there and available to us. What do we know about the numbers of people who have been getting their master's and the value of having one?
Well, we know, we can count how many master's degrees are being awarded on an annual basis, and it's been increasing pretty dramatically over the last few years, actually more than the last few years, last two decades. It's an interesting problem. So the master's degree, I think, is increasingly a degree that bachelor's students want to show that they're better than a bachelor's student. As bachelor's degrees become, you know, more and more common, and as we know that bachelor's students are now having, they're continuing to have a hard time in the job market in terms of underemployment and wages. They're looking for some way to distinguish themselves in the job market. So it seems to me like a logical next step. Well, if a bachelor's is good, then I should get a master's, and I should get this degree to show that, in fact, I am better than someone with just a bachelor's degree. So we know that part, and the thing that I was actually really surprised about was how little we know about the outcome of master's degree students. So we have an increasing amount of information that shows that what you study is more important than where you study it.
And you are also showing us that it differs state to state in many cases, and that oftentimes, and I was really surprised by this, that having a bachelor's degree or an associate degree, depending upon the emphasis or the major, may be more beneficial, at least by the amount of empirical evidence we have, than a master's degree.
Absolutely, and so I've been at this work looking for the wages of students with different degree levels and different programs of study for several years, and I've documented repeatedly the value of technical associate degrees, and I've documented the variation in bachelor's wages. So the more technical the bachelor's degree, the more likely you are to earn a high amount of money. But then I turned this lens to the wages of master's students, and I must admit I was more than a little surprised by how low some of the wages are. And it is true that there is variation state to state, and I assume if we have better data, we could even look at it by region to region. But the low wages go to, I don't hate the liberal arts, which I've been accused of many times, but the low wages tend to go to dance, music, classics, things like that.
Yeah, the things that make you a more whole person, but may not be something that impresses an employer in terms of the types of skills they're looking for. I mean, I will give you my case where I will go back to the 1970s, and I got a bachelor's degree in political science. Then I said to myself, well, I don't really want to go on to law school, but I want to continue because I want to separate myself from the pack, as you said. And I went and got one in corporate and political communication, a master's degree. And that ultimately did help me a lot because I ultimately ended up working in the state education department. And I don't think if I didn't have a master's degree that I would have gotten a lot of consideration by the commissioner for the job that I got. And then I went into public television, and I think they valued that too. But it was a very specific type of focus that I think I had that they were impressed with. And I'm not certain that there was a general applicability to my master's.
Well, I also think that this was a different time period, right?
Yeah.
I think that in the 2010s or whatever we call this current decade, I mean, you know as well as I do that a master's degree in communications is not going to be a high-value degree.
Mm-hmm. And in that era, of course, there were more jobs as we were coming out of a period of difficulty. Well, at that point, it was still a difficult moment. Do you think a lot of people have gone back for master's degrees simply because they really have a little bit of a lapse and the job that they're looking for hasn't come about? So it was a way to enhance your skills and bide your time.
Well, I mean, that's an interesting question. We know that in the Great Recession that started in 2008, 2009, a lot of students actually went to community colleges to buy their time. And as you know, the enrollments in community colleges are flat or are decreasing as the economy has gotten better. So I actually, that's an interesting question about the extent to which students have done this at the master's level. I think, so one of the messages in this paper, by the way, is something that I increasingly believe to be generalizable across all the levels, associates, bachelor's, master's, and that is that what we're really seeing is that the job market is looking for, I'll call them marketable skills or valuable skills. And so what's happening now is that we're using the major, the field of study, as sort of a signal about what skills you're likely to have. Now, in some cases, that skill, the skills that go with that major are actually quite specific, petroleum engineering. So in Colorado and Texas, even though, you know, the wages of petroleum engineers goes up and goes down depending on the, you know, how much digging they're doing for oil and the price of oil and gas, the, you know, someone coming out in petroleum engineering, you should be pretty sure what the skills are, right? Someone coming out in computer engineering or electrical engineering. I mean, there are certain kinds of majors where the skills are pretty much identifiable and are rewarded, and we could identify those. And increasingly, I believe that the market is looking for concrete, marketable skills, and it doesn't matter if it's the associate's degree, the bachelor's degree, the master's level, where employers are rewarding students with identifiable skills.
Okay, what about the colleges? What is their responsibility in all of this? In other words, if I did attain a degree in communications back in the 1970s, if they're finding that there are a lot of people who are biding their time or looking for some advantage and leg up, but they're not in these technical fields, are they building programs to meet that need, even if there isn't a job applicability directly involved at the end of that road? Or what are they finding? How are they marketing these? And what is their responsibility to help us know the economic value of these degrees?
Oh, I mean, I'm not sure, the $1 million question, the $2 million question, depending
on... Or maybe
the
$50,000
question.
Or the
$50,000
question.
So I was a university faculty member for many, many years, and it was a great job, and I loved it, and I was pretty good at it. But I think that universities have sort of put their own needs in front of the needs of students. That's what I really worry about. And actually, when I went to work for the government in 2005, and when I left in 2008, everybody expected me to go back to my university. You know, I was in chair, blah, you know, all the stuff, all the stuff that goes with it. And I couldn't. And I could not go back because I was really worried that universities had again put their own interests above the interests of their students. And you know, I mean, this is a very radical statement, and it's not uniformly true, but it is true enough. And so I'm very worried about that, and I'm worried in particular with master's degree programs, of which I created one, by the way. and the reason, you know, there's a lot of reasons for doing it. There is demand by students, and you know, in some cases, it is actually a valuable degree. But the problem is, from a university perspective, these are winners.
Right? Well, explain why they are. I mean, you tell us that American universities, and this is the first key point of your summary, awarded roughly 760,000 master's degrees during the 2014-15 academic year, yet we know little about the payoff associated with these degrees. But what kind of economic winner is it for colleges?
Well, so for colleges, so if I create a PhD program, a different problem, we're not going to talk about that one, but if I create a PhD program, the students are going to expect fellowships, teaching assistantships, graduate assistantships, they're going to expect tuition waivers, and that's part of the the coin of the realm.
Yeah,
the construct. The coin of the realm is to give, you know, students subsidize their education, and that could be extremely expensive. So I take in a bunch of PhD students, and now all of a sudden I have to worry about covering their tuition. I have to worry about giving them $30,000, $20,000 a year in assistantship aid. And if I don't do that, then some other school will do that. So PhD programs are expensive because it's a competitive market, and people expect to get these kinds of emoluments, if you will. Mm. A master's degree program is full tuition, almost always full tuition, no discounts for, you know, by assistantships or research assistantships, right? And so it's full tuition.
Mm-hmm.
And like all of a sudden, I have a profit center.
Yeah, exactly. And you don't have to worry about maintenance of dorms in general, though there are some master's degrees programs where, again, you are housed there. What about these various fields, philosophy, art, early childhood education? We did a podcast about licensing requirements in various states, and that varies greatly. But how many of the professions are now requiring? Is it about 1%? That actually require a master's degree, or are they increasing this and working in tandem with colleges to bind people so that in one case the colleges are making money, as you say, it's a profit center, in the other case the professions are making it more exclusive and therefore driving up the wages of these particular areas?
Well, I'm not sure if they're successfully driving up the wages.
But they're trying, perhaps, to limit the field.
They're trying to do that, right. They're trying to limit the field. And we can see this in nursing more. So a bachelor's of science in nursing pays a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of the hottest fields nationwide. And over time, what's happening is that the associate's degree in nursing is getting squeezed out by requirements of hospitals and licensing and all of this.
Or the old LPN. What's happened there?
Well, but if you look at the wages mm-hmm. of students that come out with an associate's degree in nursing,
mm-hmm.
they actually get a family-sustaining wage. It's not as much as a bachelor's of science in nursing, a BSN, but the fact of the matter is that there's a high demand for them and high wages. So those are two-year programs. Students often take 3 years, but these are offered by community colleges, and they are cheaper, and more. The student population is more diverse in the associate's degree for nursing, and we're closing that pathway off in favor of a BSN. This fight has been going on forever. And what's happening is that we're restricting the flow of nurses. I'm sorry, we're upskilling nurses, or we are up-credentialing nurses, which is good for the wages of nurses. It also increases the status, at least that's what the argument is, of nursing. But the fact of the matter is that associates in nursing graduates have no problems getting jobs at family-sustaining wages.
But when we look at the requirements in the nursing field, and they're becoming APRNs, they're dealing with incredible technology, they're taking over a lot of responsibilities, how much of this is driven by the realities in the workplace as opposed to, again, trying to restrict the pool?
So I think it's both, right? But I think there's always going to be a demand, or there should always be a demand for for the associates of nursing, which is a, you know, basic skill set that is, of course, not at the level of BSN, right? But there is a demand for those nurses. And the way we know there's a demand for that is the wages are so good.
Mm. Well, what about, let's take the MBA. I mean, that's the one that everybody knows by its initials. And
right.
It seems like everybody's giving out an MBA. And there are nighttime programs that can happen overnight if you need that. You can do it online, so on and so forth. What's the value of an MBA as we look at this?
So the MBA, actually, successful students getting MBAs from high-quality programs still are doing fine, right? The problem is that there are too many of them, right, too many of these programs. And the fact of the matter is that low quality programs, or people coming out of low quality programs, are having problems. It's the same thing with law schools, right? I mean, I don't have law schools in this study because you get a JD, not a master's. But the fact of the matter is that the – and what we've seen, of course, in law schools is that the demand for law schools for lawyers has collapsed. And now the law schools, especially the lower tiered law schools, are like reducing their, you know, the production.
Absolutely. And the masters, you find it to be really unconscionable in a way that federal and state governments, who in your mind have an obligation to collect and disseminate program level data on earnings, have really avoided a lot of hard study of the master's degree at the same time that that degree is now the fastest growing of all the degrees.
Yeah, and I was really puzzled by that, and I've been trying to figure out why. And I don't know the answer, you know. And I think that the bachelor's degree is still the most common degree that is granted in the United States. I mean, we can go through the whole litany of where the governments have failed on getting this kind of information out. But you can go to the census and you can get data about the earnings of bachelor graduates in I think 17 or 18 different areas of study. There turned out to be a technical requirement that the census started collecting the data on those on outcomes for bachelor graduates based on the by field of study, and it had to do with a need of the National Science Foundation, I believe, to get that kind of information. So it turned out the National Science Foundation, again, I believe it was the National Science Foundation, needed that kind of information, and they cooperated with the Census Bureau. So that's why we get wage data on a field of study for the bachelor's degree. Nobody's ever done this for the associate's degree or for the master's degree, and both of those are large programs of study with great variation in the wage outcomes. And so we've never documented this, and I think the paper, you know, the wage outcome data that I show here, it says that states should be paying attention to getting those data, and the federal government should be paying attention, because students are borrowing large amounts of money to get these degrees, and many of them are going to be in trouble.
We'll return to this episode of America Trends in just a moment. If you like what we're doing here at America Trends Podcast, please don't keep it to yourself. I know there are a lot of people, John, who think, well, if I'm listening and somebody else wants to listen at the same time, maybe we're going to collide and they're not going to be able to hear us.
Yeah.
Is that the way the technology works?
No, there's plenty of bandwidth. Everybody can listen at the same time.
All right. Well, that dispels that myth. Now, you can do a number of things that would really be helpful to us. You could give us a kind rating or a review at Apple Podcasts, and that boosts what they consider to be our value and visibility. And what does that do, John?
Well, that puts us in the forefront, so that you can find us easier, and most important is other people can find us easier.
And you can subscribe there or on our site, americatrendspodcast.com, or wherever you're listening, so we can alert you to new episodes of the podcast, which, by the way, we put out twice a week on Tuesdays and Thursdays. And stay in touch with us on both Facebook and Twitter at Trends Podcast. Or you can like us on Facebook or follow us where, John?
On Twitter.
That's right. Where the world turns to hear fake news or whatever it is. Well,
not
you can
us,
direct
though.
Message
we
us at Trends Podcast or using hashtag Trends Podcast. And you know, John, with our growing audience, and really it's been pretty remarkable, a lot of people just came to us the last month or two and they might have missed earlier episodes. Can they get them again?
They can look through them and pick the ones they want to listen to. They're all on the website, and a lot of them are up on iTunes, many of them.
All right. Well, listen, there's lots of material to listen to. We hope you have the time, and we'll lend it to us because we try to make it worth your while. And thanks so much for listening.
And tell your friends.
We now return to this episode of America Trends.
What about the rigor of these programs? And that's not necessarily something that you've been able to delve into.
No.
But I'm just wondering what your sense, as somebody who came out of a college realm, and you also started a master's degree program. Do you have any sense of that? Do people think it's a little bit easier than the bachelor's degree? It's certainly shorter time. It's more focus, and let's presume that you're in that field because you really are interested in it.
Right.
So your focus and concentration is clearer. What's your sense of the rigor of master's degree programs?
So we have, it's hard enough for us, we don't even talk about the rigor of undergraduate programs, of which there are, you know, many, many more students getting bachelor's degrees than master's degrees. And we've been talking about the, you know, how do you measure what students learn for a long time. I don't think anybody's talked about this with regard to master's students. But I look at, and I hate to say this, right, I look at the wage pattern, and rather than thinking about the rigor, I'm thinking about the skills that are built into these programs and whether or not these skills have value in the marketplace. And, you know, I hate to say this, right, because, we all should love the studio arts. We should all love music performance. I mean, these are the kinds of things that make life more enjoyable.
Right. But when you look at somebody who's going into a master's degree and it may take them a year or a year and a half or 2 years, do you think that these programs are being well thought out in terms of that?
So I want to go back to the earlier discussion. So I think there are two things going on. One is that a lot of these programs are profit centers. And the other thing is that faculty drive programs, right? Mm-hmm. You know, so faculty, if I had a PhD in studio arts, I would want to teach, you know, a small number of dedicated students the art of art, if you will, right? And faculty drive universities still. So we create these programs.
So we're doing it for the profit center. We're doing it for the professors.
For the faculty.
What are we doing for the students?
We're giving them some place to sit for 2 years.
Let me ask you this. I see here the highest paid graduates earn master's degree in the fields of business, and you talked about the variability in some of these MBA programs,
yep.
Information technology, engineering, or real estate. Now, I was a little surprised by real estate simply because there are a lot of people who are very good practitioners of both commercial or residential real estate, and they have a lot of initials after their name because they've
right.
gone for various certifications.
Right.
What's a master's degree in real estate?
So we did not study the details of the particular programs. What we have here are the what's called the SIP codes, a classification of instructional programs.
Mm-hmm.
And that's so every program in these states are classified by the field of study, the SIP code, and that's what this is about. So there's variation in all of these programs. Again, it's not that we don't have a what's the right word? A curriculum that goes across all the states or across all the, you know, across programs in a state. So so we didn't look at in particular the particular syllabus for any of these fields.
Mark Schneider is with us from the American Enterprise Institute. And the question on the table is the master's degree the new bachelor's degree? And in your report, people can get this, and we will tell them who loses in the labor market with a master's degree. And then you have a subheading, who wins in the labor market with a master's degree? For somebody who's been contemplating getting one, what do you want to say about that?
So I believe, as I said earlier, I believe that the discussion that or the what people considering higher education need to think about are the skills that they're going to end up with at the end of any course of study. So it's decreasingly important what you study. And first of all, let's go this way. It used to be where you studied mattered, right? You know, you went to a good university, but it turns out there are only a couple of hundred name brand universities, and those matter, right? Then we've gone down to, well, you know, it matters what you study. What's your field of study? And I believe that we're on the cusp of going away from the field of study, which is sort of a noisy signal about what you know and what you studied, to a much more disaggregated attention to skills. Like, what do you really know? What can you really bring to the table for an employer or for yourself if you're in a consulting business, for example? You know, a lot of people do and end up being consultants. But what do you know and what can you do for an employer or as a consultant that says, hey, I am going to bring value to your company. I am going to bring value to the job. And we see this all, you know, in a lot of different places where people are talking. We're just beginning this analysis badges and nano degrees and micro degrees. You know, we're all looking for some way of certifying the skill set that people have, because that is increasingly what's valuable. In the state of Texas, for many years, they were talking about marketable skills. You know, what are the skills that just turn you from a $30,000 a year graduate to a $50,000 to a $70,000 a year job? So this has been going on for 8-9 years with the focus on marketable skills. Everybody else is talking about them too, but the state of Texas called it marketable skills. And the work that I've been doing with Texas for years now is helping them identify the marketable skills. So we were first able to identify the high value programs, and certificates offered by community colleges, a year or 2 years. Some of them were technical associate degrees. Some of them were technical bachelor's degrees. Here we see some of them. Your technical, you get the picture. Technical.
Yeah.
And what we're working on now is the identification of the concrete skills that make these fields valuable. And we're trying to identify the technical skills. Technical skills makes it sound like it's all going to be engineering kind of thing, but the skills that could be added to a philosophy degree, or the skills that could be added to an arts degree, or skills that could be added to a political science degree that are really marketable, that again increase wages, let's say from $45,000 a year to $75,000.
Understood. But I believe I read, and maybe it was your report or elsewhere, where only 1% of the jobs today, if you see them online, say master's degree required, not preferred, but required. Is this glut of graduates who are now master's recipients, is that going to change? And do colleges have a reason to want that to change so these profit centers can maintain their profitability?
Well, it's really a question of responsibility. Yes, they could turn out more master's students, but somewhere along the line, I mean, we have to say a student, you know, graduating with a $40,000, $50,000, $80,000 debt for a $30,000 job, a $40,000 job, that we as institutions supported by taxpayers have to look at this and like, what's the right word? Stop. Right? And if we want students to have master's degrees in the fine arts, then we need, as a society, we need to decide something that's going to say, yes, we want these degrees, but we cannot ask students to take $70,000 in debt to get a degree that we know has low market value, but that may have high social value. You know, so the area that I find the hardest to the one that I find the most sympathetic are early childhood.
Mm.
Right? We know that investments in young children pay off probably more than any other level of education.
I think there is consensus about that.
Then why do we pay everybody who works in that field so little?
Mm. Absolutely. Well, again, it's the economics of the business at this point. With young parents, it's really hard. They're just trying to get started. They may be in debt, and they both have to work, but they don't have a lot of expendable income. So perhaps that's the reason. Let me ask you, you've done a great job of helping us through the master's as the new bachelor's degree. You've also written about the Associate of Arts degree, A Pathway to Nowhere. Now, we talked about the value for many of having an associate's degree. Tell us what that looks like going forward.
So here's the problem. We grant about 1 million associate degrees every year, 670,000 of them from community colleges, and about, depending on how you count it, somewhere around 40 to 50% of those are in associates of arts programs that are transfer-oriented.
So you're going to go on to a bachelor's degree, and you're hoping that those credits are going to be accepted by a four-year institution.
No, I'm going to put the hoping earlier in that sense.
Okay.
You're hoping to go on to a bachelor's degree, and then you're hoping that the credits will transfer. The fact of the matter is that most students in AA degrees never get the bachelor's degree.
Mm.
So what happens is they enroll in the associate's degree with the expectation that they'll spend 2 to 3 years at a low-cost institution, get their commodity courses, you know, the general ed courses done at a lower rate, and then transfer. So all the evidence is that if 20% of students transfer, you know, from these AA degrees, mm-hmm. we're lucky. And the students who transfer, maybe 40% end up with a bachelor's degree. So, I mean, you could just think of how that pipeline. So most students go to community college and enroll in an AA degree, about half of the students, with the goal of transferring and getting a bachelor's degree, and the vast majority of them never get that degree. So what happens is that they get an AA degree that is not skills-oriented, that's not designed for marketability, not designed for jobs, and they end up with this AA degree, and they do better than high school graduates. I mean, no, there's no question about that, but they are losing money compared to peers who have taken more technical courses. So we need to figure out, and there are many problems with this, but some of them are problems because we make them problems, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
We need to figure out how to tell students, like, here are some skills that matter, right? These are skills that are, as far as we could tell, will be in demand when you finish your course of study in a year or two. Even if you think that you're going on to a bachelor's degree, you should get some of these skills because 80% of you are not going to end up.
Right. If this is the end of the road academically, here's how you can really have value put upon it. For example, I know in a community college near us where we are broadcasting from that, in fact, the manufacturing course really gives these young people great value, and they are really in demand when they come out.
Absolutely. And we need to look at that more carefully. We need to figure out, you know, which of the existing programs have high rates of return. We need to figure out how to take this liberal arts. And talking about the classification of instructional program, the standard federal classificatory system, the SIP codes, it is called the associate's degree in general education, liberal arts, and humanities, some mix of those of those words. And again, large numbers of students are in those programs. That is the most of the students in community colleges are in that program. It's the modal category. And, like, we need to figure out how to save it. It could be as simple as getting industry-recognized certifications in there, or telling students, here's three courses that are data analytic courses. Data and analytic skills are really in high demand right now. Here are data analytic skills. Or, you know, finish your associate's degree, and in the last summer, we'll give you a boot camp in X, Y, or Z. as a, you know, to as a finishing school if you need this to find a job, or do it in between the first and the second year, right? We need to figure out the how to improve the career and technical education skills that students who think they're going on to bachelor's, that most of them won't. We need to figure out how to embed those skills in the training program.
And what I find interesting is, if we're looking at the associate's degrees and we're looking at the master's degrees, in many ways, there's something complementary. I mean, if you're working with computers or real estate, allied health, engineering, electrical, mm-hmm. manufacturing, that whether it's an associate's degree or a master's degree, the technical nature of it and the skills that are demonstrable and probably measurable when you come out make you more valuable on both levels.
Absolutely. And actually, by the way, we could talk about the same argument with regard to bachelor's.
Of course. And that gets so much more study than these two.
I want to thank you, Mark Schneider, for being with us today. He's a visiting scholar in the area of higher education. And this is a topic that fascinates me and I don't think has gotten enough attention. I want to thank you again for coming by today on America Trends.
Thank you. My pleasure.